now. Next up, has politics become too brutal? Andrea Leadsom dramatically withdrew from the Tory leadership race yesterday. We saw that all play out in front of us, didn't we? Means that Theresa May is going to be the next Prime Minister within hours. Leadsom's allies are complaining about her treatment. In this age of spin, 24-hour news, Twitter, is politics now in danger of becoming too vicious? Like, you think about how politicians here in Northern Ireland, for example, are handled by people like me and how they handle me. How I handle them and how they handle me. Is it too antagonistic? Is it too vicious? Is it too aggressive? Or is that what you expect? And should they be man and woman enough to put up with it? Former MPs, Gerry Hayes, Len Budopick with us this morning. Sorry, Seamus Close is with us this morning. Len Budopick with us, former MLA, Seamus. Morning, Seamus.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Morning, Len.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good morning, good morning. What do you think, Seamus? Has it all got too aggressive or should they just put up with it?
I think you should just put up with it. If you can't stand the heat, the old saying, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. I mean, you're in politics, you're representing, or you want to be representing an awful lot of people. They want to see a strong voice. They want you to be able to stand up for what you believe. They want you to be a strong-willed, a strong-minded politician who will fight on behalf of the people that they represent to get their way, to see things done. Not backing off, not being wimpish about it. And, you know, okay, people, if you make a mistake, and I believe that part of the reason why there's only, why Theresa May ended up as the Prime Minister was because her only contender made a mistake. She demonstrated her naivety in front of the media.
Gave that interview to the Times in which she compared and contrasted herself having kids to Theresa May not. Didn't go down well for her.
It didn't go down. She made a big mistake. I think then she tried to back off. She said that the paper had misquoted her, etc., etc., and then she ends up apologising. Now, you think before you speak. You engage your brain before you open your mouth. And if you don't do that, if you make a mistake, well, then the only person you can blame is yourself. And what she was demonstrating was her, in my opinion, was her naivety in front of a press, a press who are going to probe. People like you, your job is to probe and to get the responses on behalf of the electorate.
Yeah, and this discussion this morning goes well beyond Andrea Leadsom, doesn't it? It goes into Len Budopick, how we treat our politicians, how the public expect them to be treated, how journalists should treat them.
It's ironic to hear Seamus Close say what he said. He's been nothing less than a gentleman. In all the many years, it's been my honour to work with you, Seamus. But the thing is, Seamus, you haven't found yourself in the kind of position that I found myself in and others, where the press remorselessly, inhumanely turn on things that are absolutely nothing to do with politics. Now, that's the first thing. We've talked about that before. If you want to go down that path, I'm happy to do so. The personal attacks, the endless corrosion of things outside politics and bringing families into it. Then the second point that Seamus makes, a very interesting one. Yeah, politics can be brutal. There can be lots of knockabout between politicians, by the media, by you, Mr. Nolan, because one of your jobs is to be the inquisitioner, to get to the facts. But it can become prurient. It can get to the stage where it looks like, let's pull down this person. And I feel that that's a bit what's happened to Andrea Leadsom. Yes, she did make mistakes, as Seamus says. But at the same time, if you look at the whole quotation of what she said, it's nothing nearly as bad as the way it's been made out. And what's the consequence of all of this? There is one. It takes away empathic people, more gentle-minded people, who have so much to contribute to public life. But they see this happening, and then they go, I'm not going to expose myself to it. I'm just going to do an easier job. And then we lose great human talent, and we have just the alpha male knockabout, whether they're male or female.
I'm interested in what you think at home. You hear, as I say, on this programme on the No Live Telly Show, how we treat politicians. You've seen the politicians bite back on many, many programmes that we've done. What do you think about the standard of discourse, about the tone of it all? 0-30-30-80-55-55. Of course, if you flip the coin, Seamus, and you go too far the other way, we shouldn't be, you know, politely addressing these people as sir and madam and asking them if they don't mind if we ask them a difficult question.
No, I take part of the point that Lembit makes, and I do agree that when it becomes very personal, then the media are going over a particular line. But I think it is incumbent, therefore, upon the individual, the politician, when he or she finds that the media are becoming personal, to be as brutal back with the particular interviewer. You're there representing people. You're there representing your electorate, and you will fight your corner on a number and a variety of issues. But if they try to step in and become too personal, and surely it's up to you to prevent that from happening and to demonstrate that you're not a wimp, that you're going to stand on your own feet, and that you're going to deny them the type of sordid details that they might want to dig into your particular past.
So it's very difficult to do that, Seamus, because, for example, I went out with a pop singer, and at the same time, I happen to be leader of the Welsh Liberal Democrats and working with you, as it happens, on the Northern Ireland peace process. All a majority of the press wanted to talk about was my Romanian girlfriend. They didn't want to talk about the difficulties going on in Belfast. They weren't really interested in how the evolution was shaping up, as far as I could see anyway, in Wales. They just wanted to talk about who I was sleeping with. Now, the difficulty is, if that's all
you're if you start to date a cheeky girl, Lembit, that's going to draw attention. You understand the game.
Perfectly reasonable. I've always said it's perfectly reasonable. And, you know, people had some fun with it. I didn't object to having conversation about it. The difficulty was, it was then converted into what amounted to a brutal attack on me personally on the basis of my personal life. Now, let's bring this right up to the present day. I was with a politician last night. I won't name him. He had to leave Parliament because of embarrassing stories about his sex life. I'm not, however many times you ask me, I'm not going to tell you who it was. I was talking to him about it. He's no interest in being involved in public life ever again. Now, I'm asking this question. When it gets to the stage where people who have interesting personal lives, which have no relevance to their ability to do their job, maybe a lot of relevance to their families, but not to doing their job, have we gone too far? Is it the fact now that if there's anything interesting about you, anything you maybe regret, maybe you took drugs when you were younger, who knows, anything like that, you think, I'm staying away from politics. If so, we end up with the bland greyness of people in Parliament and in the Northern Ireland Assembly and elsewhere who don't really understand the mistakes the rest of us make.
And then, of course, there's the small issue of we have a new Prime Minister from tomorrow, don't we? Theresa May. I wanted to let you two hear, this is a little bit of the exchange I had with Theresa May last year on welfare cuts during the general election campaign. Have a listen to this.
Very clear that the of the 30 billion that we say needs to be saved, 30 billion which, by the way, Labour voted for as well, they accepted that 30 billion is going to have to be saved in public sector expenditure. 13 billion of that will come from savings in government departments, 5 from bearing down on tax avoidance and tax evasion, and 12 billion from welfare. And yes, we have said, I mean, there are some indications about what we would do, such as freezing working age benefits. So, you know, we are being clear about the approach that we would take.
You're not being
but
clear.
But it's important
You're
to
not
have
being
a strong...
Clear. Well, hold on a second. You're not being clear about the 12 billion. And if you want to challenge me on that, spell out tonight, Theresa May, add up the 12 billion for me. Let's start at zero. Add it up.
What you will see is when the time comes, you will see the whole of the 12 billion. But what I've just done I've just indicated to you, for example, working age benefits being frozen. But why we need the question is
and
why do we need
to
do this? The question is why do we need to do these changes?
But that's not the question.
Why do we need to do this?
Yes, it is the question. But you're not addressing the question that I'm asking, which is tell us tonight, because here we have this political language from you that you're being really clear. So be crystal clear with me tonight and help me understand how you get to the 12 billion.
I have indicated to you that, given you an indication in relation to the part of the 12 billion.
That adds up to how much?
But I've been clear about part of the 12 billion, but what I'm very clear about, and we've said that we will not be, I'm not setting out tonight every detail of that 12 billion.
You're not setting out most of it.
What I'm clear about is why we need to take these measures.
You see,
and the Labour Party has supported the 30 billion cuts. They voted in Parliament
for those
30 billion
cuts. But Theresa, here's what I don't understand.
So, Seamus and Lambert, that was just a flavour of the exchange. There were some people actually complained after that interview that I was too tough on her.
No, you weren't. I mean, you were like the dog with the bone. You'd obviously seen a weakness. You'd ask a simple question: how does your 12 billion? How does it add up? And she started to try to use some might say fancy footwork. Some might say obfuscation, avoiding the issue. and you kept at it.
And that's the frustrating thing about some politicians for the public, Lambert, that they won't answer a straight question with a straight answer.
My terms are going to be the same as a bit. I think that you're entitled to keep pushing. She used a phrase which myself and Seamus both probably shuddered at. Let me be quite clear about this. Usually meaning they're going to be anything other than clear
exactly.
about it.
Yeah.
To be clear, you don't say it. You actually just get straight to the answer. The frustration in politics is that, well, for example, back to the Northern Ireland peace process, we all had to be very specific, very precise when we were going through that. That kind of stuff just didn't work because everyone in the business was smart. When you listen to that kind of thing, people go, oh, for goodness sake, they yeah. shout at the radio. Now, I would say that you were legitimately pursuing something on that occasion. There are other times, though, the politician says, I'm not willing to discuss that now. That's a legitimate response from a politician. But if they say they're going to be clear, they should jolly well be clear. And as Seamus says, you did find a bone there and you were chewing on it. And I think probably okay. the listeners would be on your side on this
occasion. All right. Listen, always nice to talk to you both. Thank you very much, Lambert. Thank you, Seamus. Thank you.